today and stay with us for a better us.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. And we've managed to mess up the sound for our engineer. We're sorry about that. Just,
I got nothing.
Bill's got nothing. try those headset. You know, it always is an episode. There are people here who do a show right before us and everything seems to work fine. Then we walk in and, uh-oh, nothing works.
I got nothing.
Bill's got nothing. Huh.
Yep. Do I have a mic?
You do.
Oh, okay, good.
Do you want to, let's see, so my name's Aaron Ryan.
Oh, there it is.
Let me give you
something, Bill.
Robert, under the table, you have to quit talking.
I still got nothing.
Still got nothing. Everybody's got nothing.
Well, it shows that I'm getting something here.
Huh. Well, we got Bill on a real short leash today. Bill's going to have to stand up. Not good.
Okay, we're here.
Huh.
Temporarily.
So, after that, because who wouldn't want to be our sponsor, right? Should we talk about other things before we go there?
Yeah.
Let's see, we've got Robert under the desk struggling. We've got Bill on a short tethered rope. We've fun for everybody.
Yeah. So what's going on today? Who are you?
I already said. I already confessed that I'm Aaron Ryan.
Okay. Well, who's our sponsor today?
Yeah, sponsors.
Tap A Machinery.
Whoa,
of course.
I thought you were having me do it. I was like, wow,
this is new.
I'm all excited.
We're not that messed up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, our sponsor today is Tap A Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And if you need anything John Deere, anything ag, go by and see them. They do it all over there. They do part sales service, and they can get you fixed up. Right now, they're doing a booming business in service. So if you got a tractor or a mower or something needs to be fixed up, go by and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, and you can get them on the web at tapamachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Just thought I'd leave you hanging there for a second.
Oh, no, that's okay.
So we should, here, before we get too much farther along down the trail, let's switch headsets so you don't have to stand here for 2 hours leaning over the table. Our guest today is really fun, though. Thank goodness. Thank goodness somebody knows what they're doing. We haven't had William Kay on for a while. He's probably like, God, these guys got gotten even worse since the last time I talked to them. They're complete goofballs. Well, let's see. Our friend, William Kay, started coming on with us in December of 2011. So he was one of our very first favorite people, which is kind of awesome. And he has a website. Let's not forget about that one. Ecofascism.com. Great site. Tons of information. The purpose is to expose both the similarities between environmentalism and fascism and the connections between environmentalism and modern fascistic or arch-conservative individuals and groups. Really individual, a really unique perspective, and always very well-researched. He lives in Alberta, Canada. He hosted a program in Vancouver on the radio until, gosh, I know, no one's ever heard about this, right? Especially with what's going on with all the protests and the burning the buildings down. But intolerant, free speech-hating environmentalists drove him off the air. I can't believe they haven't driven us off the air yet. We've been on here for like 10 years.
What's the deal there? Or nobody.
We live in a small town. Bonus.
You're having me on. Don't worry.
The Chinese have our number, though.
That's right. The Chinese hate us. And you know what? I added two things to the page for William today, actually. And I should tell you, we're airing May 31st of 2020, in case we replay this at another time and you don't understand why we talked about people burning down buildings. So on our website at wethepeopleradio.us, I do hope you go on there. Just click on the page for today, May 31st, 2020, and it gives you the link to the Canada Free Press articles that he writes, and also the link to Global Research, which is a center for research on globalism. So for those of you that are into following those topics or like to research those things, he has a lot of really good material on there. And I found out right before we left the house, actually, that he also has books.
What?
I didn't know about books. What the heck, William? You've been writing books, too?
Yeah, I've got a couple of books online. I've got one book that deals with the history of the global population control movement. It's a sort of a primer. It runs through about 200 years of history in about 200 pages. But
and we did a show about that with you, actually. We did a show.
Yep.
If people are, you hear that every now and then. Oh, it's about population control, and people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. Seriously? Go to our page.
No, it's a coherent movement with a budget of about $40 billion.
Yeah.
That's been promoting abortion and sterilization, things around the world. But it sort of ties into today's topic, because if you looked at the that Montreal article on the Montreal nursing homes, I tied it very closely to the Montreal area euthanasia movement. And they dominate the political scene there. And they've dramatically liberalized euthanasia in Montreal. And it's the same people who dominate the medical establishment there. And Montreal is very much like what you have in the New York, Boston area in the United States. You have an area with these enormous COVID-19 death tallies, like far out of whack with the rest of the country. And if you look closer, the deaths are almost entirely in nursing homes. So it's interesting that one of the main websites would only print that story if I deleted any reference to the Montreal euthanasia movement.
Oh, interesting.
He didn't want to go down that road. He just wanted, what's that?
Interesting. That they made you take that out before you could print the article?
Yeah, because he didn't want to make that connection. I don't know, it's sort of a, anyway, that's their trip. I get all kinds of things sort of weird. People want to sort of have rewrite the article for you. But that hasn't happened there. I didn't do it with the stuff I've done so far on New York. There's just only so much you can put in, like an 1,100 or 1,200-word article. That's one that's definitely coming. New Jersey passed a really liberal euthanasia bill like 3 months before COVID. Not that they had any foresight. It just leads to an understanding of the medical establishment in that area. You find a lot of people there are very frustrated euthanasia people. They haven't been able to get the sort of laws passed that they wanted to, and they've been pressing for decades. So that's I don't want to put that in the foreground, because it's really it's more sort of a latent motive within this community. They had other sort of upfront ulterior motives. What I wanted to talk about was the whole business of patient seeding. Are you familiar with that concept?
Oh yeah, yeah. I read the articles you sent us, and I was shocked at what we don't know about what's going on with these nursing homes. It's shocking.
You know, to me, the key article, there's an Associated Press article. I'm going to pop it up right here now, which I hyperlink on one of my articles, and it dates. The one I've got now is May 21st. And they estimate that 4,500 COVID-19 patients were sent from hospitals in New York State to nursing homes in New York State. And that would have happened over about a five-week period. And I'm estimating just in New York State, about 300 nursing homes had major outbreaks.
Wow.
And it happened in New Jersey. It happened in like I mentioned, that one, the Boston Newark megapolis. It's basically a consolidated city there. Newark, New York, Stamford, Hartford, Providence, Boston. It's a consolidated city there. And this policy appears to have been conducted right across that city, the whole megapolis. And I'm not exaggerating, because some of the Connecticut and Massachusetts and New Jersey are giving pretty good statistics. New York is just lying like crazy to minimize their nursing home body count. But right now in Massachusetts, there's 6,700 dead from COVID, 4,300 nursing home residents.
Wow.
And they are also trying to put their thumb on the scale to minimize that number. And every one of those states, 50 to 100 nursing home workers dead. There's some nursing homes where five workers died in 1 month. And it was all back to this business of when the pandemic first started to hit, these big hospitals, and these are some enormous companies, these health systems on the East Coast, they just started to shunt their patients to nursing homes. And a lot of these nursing homes had no ability to handle it. There's a video online you can find. There was one nursing home that was given 58 COVID patients, like here.
And they weren't, senior citizens?
Oh, yeah, they were all senior citizens. Okay. They had to be some sort of reason to send them there, right?
Okay, yeah, that's what I wondered.
What wasn't going to happen is they weren't going to have them in the hospitals. The hospitals had to clear their deck to make room for COVID-19 patients, which makes no sense. But they said to make room for the potential wave of intensive care COVID patients. There's an excellent quote online from one of the leading doctors involved in California's long-term care industry. He's a spokesman for a society in California, and he makes it really big. And these are people who protested immediately when New York and New Jersey started just flat out sending them to these nursing homes. And he says, you know, for every one you send, within a couple of weeks, you're going to get 20 back. And that's exactly what happened in New York. Like, the hospitalizations there are way out of line.
Yeah, because their numbers just mushroomed uncontrollably. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be right back with our guest, William Kay. He is on with us for the full show, so even though we had a little fumble at the outset, we're all good now.
Oh, we're locked down.
We're all good now. You're going to get a ton of great information. So you can follow us at wethepeopleradio.us, and all the links to William's information are on there. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood?
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
This podcast is for storytellers of all kinds. We discuss everything from the hero's journey to how to slog through that pesky middle section of your book. From filling out your author's toolbox to answering your questions about the craft and the industry. From magic to mayhem.
In June, we're discussing the four-letter words of the writing process. Those are scary words like edit and read and show versus tell. In July, we take a look at marketing and how you can make money with your books.
So whether
founded
you're
in 1995, GI Pathology
still
is the only physician-owned laboratory
now
in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Somehow we got this song. I guess it was just because William's from Canada, so I guess we'd just throw down and get the America thing in there.
Yeah, I guess so. We're out of control.
Last time William was on here, we learned that the Canadians don't all really hang on the national anthem like we do. Remember that? I've laughed about that so many times. He said, yeah, they don't really know the words. They change them all the time. I just want you to know for the past 2 years, we've still been laughing about that.
True.
Oh, that's funny.
So with the nursing home, one of the things that I thought was astounding was the fact that they're sending all these people to the nursing homes. Nursing homes had no ability to isolate patients with their air systems and whatnot. So it was a pretty much a guarantee once you started sending people there that everybody in the place was going to get it.
Well, yeah.
And add to that.
I've probably come across, like, there's a lot of good local journalism, like the Long Island Chronicle, and, you know, there's a lot of those local papers are really talking to the people from the homes themselves. I've come across, I'd say, a dozen articles where they mentioned not only not isolate the person, that person was going into a dormitory.
Oh.
Where there was like, you know, I don't know, half a dozen other beds.
Right.
One toilet. I mean, it's just the opposite of a quarantine. You're taking infected people and you're putting them there. On March the 28th, you know, Cuomo and Zucker and the other one, they sent out that directive to every nursing home in New York State saying that you will take whatever patient you are sent by a hospital, and you are not allowed to ask if they've got COVID-19, and you are not allowed to test them for COVID-19. You are going to take them. That's bottom line. And they would have only have sent that had there not, because they start the letter by saying, just to clarify things. Because you could tell they were already trying to send these patients to the nursing homes, and a lot of the nursing homes are refusing them. And we don't have the gear to handle that.
Sure.
And then that letter went out. The identical letter goes out in New Jersey 2 weeks later. The identical letter went out on March the 8th, or almost 3 weeks earlier, in Lombardy, Italy.
The same exact wording?
I haven't read the Italian one, but it was to the exact same effect. It was forcing all local nursing home owners to receive these people. And they were really lowballing the risk at the time, and they paid them 160 euros per patient they took in. First, like the granddaddy of these biobombings of nursing homes was one in downtown Milan. It's a 1,000-unit nursing home. Sometime after March the 8th, they received what they were told were 19 recovering COVID patients. Within 2 or 3 days of them receiving those 19 patients, 7 of them died. I mean, they were recovering from anything. They were in the meat throes of it.
Sure.
And a couple of the accounts, they use phrases like, in the blink of an eye, or, you know, in a few days, the place was completely overrun. Staff had asked to use protective gear. They were denied. They were forcibly told they couldn't even bring their own from home because you're scaring the patients. So there was a week or two there, nobody was wearing protective gear, and it just ran rampant over the building. I'm not exaggerating. The last body count was 405 in one nursing home.
Holy
and that
cow.
Is the granddaddy of them all. Although I would say in the Boston, New York, Newark area, we've probably got 40 to, you know, 60 that have over 100 deaths in one facility.
So like
there's
40%
after account.
40% of the beds were dead people at that point.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was one in New Jersey. It was the whole wings of it had been abandoned. So many workers had got sick. Everyone stopped showing up. Police went in there. They found 17 dead bodies stacked in one room. This is in New Jersey. There's a lot of these facilities. They're reporting it, and they're underreporting. But that particular facility is in Andover, New Jersey. They're still right now claiming that only 71 have died. There was a lawsuit filed in late April said that already by that time 84 had died. So if you go to this, you know, all over the place, I'm saying there's hundreds of these facilities that have had these massive outbreaks, and there's nowhere else in the United States are they that concentrated. There was a really bad one in Washington State early on.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones.
And was that the same thing?
Yeah, it was not seeding. I don't know how it happened there. It just happened by accident. It does happen by accident, but it should have been a total object lesson. Because by the time they issued that decree to all the hospitals, to all the nursing home administrators that you were going to take these people, the lessons of that Kirk County, Washington one were well known. I mean, they had already had 30 or 40 dead. Half the residents were in ICU in hospitals. It was a disaster. It was an accidental entry of the virus into a nursing home. But it should have told everyone in America. The CDC wrote a report 2 days on the 27th of March saying just how dangerous it was. And it was looking at the Kirk County example of how we just got to completely quarantine off all nursing homes. And that was before Cuomo and Zucker and these guys sent out that letter telling these guys you're going to have to take them and then sending 4,000 infected patients into nursing homes.
So the CDC had prior to the Cuomo order, the CDC knew and had publicly stated that that was a danger.
Oh, yeah. They go into details. They've done a couple of estimates on how easily people could shed the virus, how easily asymptomatic people could shed the virus in the nursing home environment. Also, okay, they write that letter, I think March 28th. It was not until April the 19th that they made it, they prohibited COVID-19 positive workers from working until that time. So from March 28th to April the 19th, they're just pouring infected inpatients into these nursing homes, and they've got workers in those homes who are testing positive, and it is not a requirement for you to stop working. And they're working without PPE, and they're working in multiple homes.
Oh.
That
yeah,
went on for a solid month.
Yeah.
Now, this is, you can only describe it as a deliberate attempt to spread this virus. It beggars my imagination that anybody would commit these many homicides intentionally. My theory was that at the very early times of this pandemic, the fear amongst the sort of the hospital bureaucrats and the sort of medical complex of the U.S. Northeast and others was that it was going to be a dud. There wasn't going to be much of a pandemic. And they thought that by sort of getting the ball bouncing, by sending these patients into nursing homes, they'd get things going. And you can tell by about April 16th, Howard Zucker, the minister of the health commissioner of New York State, he's now starting to put the brakes on it. He calls this an emergency telephone conference with one of the 600 nursing home operators in New York State, and he forces them to draw up lists of all the people they think that they've died from COVID and all the ones that they know have lab tested, et cetera, and they start really manipulating the statistics. But you can tell it's kind of a Frankenstein's monster story. I mean, they definitely wanted to introduce these infections into these nursing homes, but I think they underestimated. This is a totally new virus. They really underestimated just how much damage this virus could do in a nursing home. Like there's account after account of, within a few days, the place is in complete panic. I mean, it's spreading so rapidly. There's so many sick workers. There's so many people refusing to work. The workload has increased so much. And when this happened in Montreal, there were nursing homes for the really sort of seriously bedridden people. There was one staffer per 30 workers. So many staffers were sick or refusing to work. And so there were people dying of dehydration. There's just horror stories coming out of Montreal.
Oh, my God.
You know, once again, it's the police and the army eventually has to go in there. Across much of Montreal, there's about 15 nursing homes that are being run by the Canadian Army right now.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're getting sick.
Wow.
And they issued this scathing report. But it was more than anything, it was sort of the epidemic amongst the nursing home working staff causes this absolute chaos.
Right.
Like in home after home, I'm reading these accounts of various homes in New Jersey. Within a day or two, nobody's answering the phone. Nobody's at the front desk. Like whatever limited staff they have, they're all in ICU units or makeshift ICU units in the backs of these nursing homes where dead bodies are going out a couple times a day.
Hmm. Nobody is reporting at this point.
No, they are reporting it right now. The initial statistics were very vague about exactly who was dying. And they were doing that deliberately to exaggerate the impact of the virus. Like, there was those two California doctors who gave that video that got pulled off YouTube.
Yeah,
but
right.
They hit the nail on the head. The broader healthy population was not at risk at all. But a lot of the early death data coming out of the pandemic promoters really obscured exactly who was dying. And it was only after a couple of weeks into this that we started realizing that a quarter of them were over the age of 90. And then as time wears on, you realize, A, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, that tight cluster of five states, they have about 55% of U.S. deaths are all in that one spot. And then further investigation, you realize that overwhelmingly, probably the major 70 to 80% of all those deaths are in nursing homes that these clowns I have total watch and supervision over. Mm. And it's Cuomo, the guy that's going on national television telling us how to do pandemics.
Right.
And he's watching over just a mass extermination.
We've got to take a break, but yeah, let's talk about that when we get back. The Como show that I think was
the Mario Brothers.
Yeah. Exactly.
It was the giant Q-tip,
the big cover up.
that destroys both their careers. Anyway, you are listening to We the People. Our guest today is William Kay. You can find all the information about the program and previous shows with this guest, which are really informative. You can catch all that at WePeopleRadio.us.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio. Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership. The Dental Discount Savings Plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-57 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
Well, there you go, William. Perfect song for the Cuomo brothers.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about Andrew Cuomo. Like, I mean, I don't think I picture him as kind of a bit thick. You know, like not entirely that bright. He's someone who obviously, you know, was born and married into high politics of the area. And I don't know if he has a sort of the evil intent that I see in Howard Zucker, like the health commissioner. I mean, well, my question is, what did Cuomo know and when did he know it? Like, how did he understand this whole patient seeding process? He knew it was going on. His name was on top of that one letter. But at that time, there was a lot of hype coming out of the hospitals saying that we don't have enough space. We've got to clear away all this space for all these ICU units. That's why we've got to send these thousands of patients, these COVID patients to these nursing homes. So maybe Cuomo he's just sort of signing on to this. He's totally deferring to Zucker, the health commissioner. That's my theory. I don't really think that he's someone who would actually sign off on something this off the wall.
Once that started, there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. I mean,
but they kept doing it.
But the crazy.
Yeah, they
did it until May the 10th. I'm not sure when they actually stopped doing it. They came out clearly. They rescinded that letter on May the 10th. So there's a six-week period there. 7-week period there when when nursing homes had no choice. Like any hospital could say, that person's going to that home, boom, done. But I think my theory was that by late April, they had already pretty much stopped doing it. And they were just, and they, for some reason, there was this other delay. I can't believe they were still doing it May the 10th. But of course, now they're holier than thou. When they announced the decision that they would no longer send a COVID-19 patients into totally unprepared nursing homes, they then announced these things that they're going to test every nursing home worker twice a week. Anybody with a resident of the nursing home who gets COVID is going to be immediately transferred out. So they've completely reversed themselves. And now there's posturing as the front line, as the vanguard in terms of tough regulations on nursing homes. But there was this, you know, several-week period there, sending in the patients, you know, disrupting the ability to use proper equipment in there. The same hospitals that were sending the patients to the nursing home were also hogging all the personal protective gear. And these hospital systems, they're much larger than these little nursing homes.
Sure.
So they made it very difficult for a several-week period for there to be any proper infection control, any proper testing in those homes. Now they're posturing, the paragons of geriatric hygiene, but this is not what they were doing before. There's a really important article in the Federalist saying people just cannot let this article go away. There's a few, One American Network had a couple of articles on it, and Fox has had a couple of good articles on it, but I just can't believe they're going to get away with this.
Do they actually have a number yet of how many folks were infected in nursing homes in New York? I mean,
the actual number. You can go to the New York Health Authority has that. What they obscure is death in nursing homes. When Health Commissioner Howard Zucker had his emergency April 16th teleconference with, 614 nursing home operators, he was already in a panic at that time.
Right.
And I can't remember where I was going with it.
Well, so I know they were taking
okay, what
the
he
death.
Did, okay, now I remember where I was going with that. He ordered them that on their list of deaths, you are not allowed to include anybody who died off facility.
Right.
So if they're in the ambulance going back to the hospital, they're not counted. That you can have a 15-year resident at a nursing home, contracts the virus at the nursing home, dies a day after being shipped to the hospital. That is not considered a nursing home death
exactly.
in New York, and it's the only state that's doing that.
So there's no way they're ever going to come up with
that. So you can get all the numbers you
number.
Want, but you can't get nursing home death out of New York.
Right. So they'll never have an accurate number on how many people were actually
infected. Oh, no. There are so many lawsuits right now. There are already class action lawsuits. There are hundreds of lawsuits for wrongful death that have already been launched. They are going to dig it up. They are going to dig up the time of every hospital transfer to every nursing home. They're going to dig up. What they could start with in New York is on January 1st, there was 101,000 people living in nursing homes. You have a list of actual people with actual names. I'm saying that already 20,000 of those are dead. This isn't going to end. So that's another way. You look at the aggregate death figures. They're not going to get away with it.
No.
They just have to try to stretch it out as long as they can and mystify the issue as much as they can.
And when you look at those numbers, and you compare it to the total number of deaths in New York, it's really not a pandemic on the streets. It's a pandemic in.
Oh no! Good point. Yes, this is entirely within institutions because it's
right.
also rampant in the hospitals.
Right.
And get this: talk about like just evil intent. There's a Long Island Chronicle article about the systematic putting of COVID patients into detox facilities around the city, and a lot of them have had 10, 15 fatalities. There's a wider picture. There's the geriatric wards in a lot of the hospitals, rampant in there. So if you think of, I did it with Montreal. I came to the conclusion it was over 90% of all fatalities were inside government-run institutions or government-regulated institutions.
Right.
You're right. It was not an issue on the street.
And I gotta believe even that
California,
that's the same,
check California.
Same thing in New York.
Yeah,
it's got to be the same. I mean, it's not. It's in the institutions where the problem is, and here they've locked down the entire city, closed people's businesses, and made a big mess out of this when the problem wasn't there.
Yeah, they were looking over it. Just give you some scale here. New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, collective population, 40 million. It's almost identical to the collective population of California, 40 million. COVID deaths in those five connected states, 55,000. Same population, California, COVID deaths, 4,200. Those states probably have, when the truth gets out, already over 30,000 nursing home deaths. California, 1,700 nursing home deaths. I mean, that's the difference in scale. These are the same population sizes.
Right.
One had 1,700 nursing home deaths. One had, 30,000 plus.
But the nursing homes.
How are they gonna explain that?
Well, like the nursing homes around the country, I only really heard about the people being sent back to nursing homes once they'd been infected on the East Coast. Was that being? Were they saying to do that elsewhere, and just nobody followed the rules, or was that just
happening? To my knowledge, there's only a paper trail in four states. I think it is New York, New Jersey, Michigan. And I think maybe Illinois. But if I'm looking at Massachusetts and Connecticut, and they are so similar to what happened in New York and New Jersey, where we have these letters with the governor's name on top saying, you're going to take these patients. There's a paper trail in New York and New Jersey. I just don't think that paper trail exists in those other states in that region. But you're right. I would say probably 46 of the states of the union, or 45 of the states of the union, never did this, never did patient seeding. California's death per million from COVID, 107. New York State's death per million, 1,538. And if you get into places like the Bronx, it's way over 2,000 deaths per million. California, once again, is 107 deaths per million, which is like nothing compared to what happened over there.
Right.
You got to wonder, like, is this the same virus? Are we talking about the same disease here?
Right.
Yeah.
Massachusetts, almost 1,000. Connecticut is over 1,000 deaths per million. The top five in the U.S. are those five states in terms of deaths per million. New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island. And they are just one tight, integrated unit that has been ruled by the Democratic Party as a one-party state for 50 years.
Mm.
And there isn't a person working in the medical-industrial complex on the government side of the equation who wasn't appointed by those people.
Well, that's...
that says a lot.
Yeah, that gives you pause.
Any connection between the medical... folks in those states, the people making decisions or advising the governor, any connection between those people?
Okay, put on your space helmets. I'll explain. They're the space age organizations. They are ultra-modern organizations. They hardly exist anywhere else in the world. They are non-profit societies. There are no shareholders. But over a long period of time, the managers of these enterprises manipulate and co-opt the board of directors or the board of trustees into the point where they are basically a rubber stamp of what the managers do. But if the managers fight amongst themselves, then they have to go back to the board to sort it out. But some of these have turned into large enterprises. And what you find in New York, New Jersey, Boston, Connecticut, and Rhode Island are these things called health systems. Like there's now, it's no longer Mount Sinai Hospital, it's Mount Sinai Health System. And they own a dozen hospitals and clinics and what have you. Some of these are immense enterprises I never even knew existed. There's one called Hackensack Meridian. And it is it's confined, because it's a nonprofit society, it can only operate inside New Jersey. But it owns 17 hospitals. It has 34,000 employees. There's another one, it's a nonprofit society called Partners Health. And it is confined to operating only within Massachusetts. And it owns seven full hospitals. It has 75,000 employees. Its medical supply equipment budget is over $3 billion a year.
Wow.
So across this area, this sort of Boston Newark Ages area, there's a couple of dozen of these. Well, they're nonprofit societies, but they usually have the word health system in their name. And amongst those group, this group of about a dozen, two dozen nonprofit corporations, they probably own about 100 or so hospitals, and those would be the largest, newest hospitals in the area. A lot of them also own long-term care facilities, but they don't have a big part of that action. But these are big fish in little ponds. They're all integrated into the local university systems. Quite often they have co-joint ventures with a university's medicine department. They reap huge amounts of government grants. Just that Mount Sinai health system, they pull in about $400 million a year just in U.S. federal government research and development grants. So they get money from philanthropists. They get money from running these hospitals like commercial enterprises. And the senior executives of these things are very well paid. Generally, salaries of an executive of one of these health systems would range from about $7 to $12 million a year. And the executive is there's a lot of executives. There's that Hackensack Meridian one. There's probably 30 executives making over $1 million a year.
Gosh, so while they're a nonprofit society, that explains the cost of the bandwidth.
Yeah, it sounds like nonprofit business
is doing well. Okay, we've got to take a little break in the middle of this. Sorry, okay. I hate to bust your momentum here. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
No.
You are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Enjoy delicious Black Bear Diner food in the comfort of your own cave. Try one of our 9 new family meals to go, like the breakfast combo family meal loaded with eggs, thick-cut bacon, sausage links, and 4 huge house-baked biscuits. Or the chicken fried steak family meal for 4 with country gravy, cornbread muffins, and 2 large family sides. Starting at $19.99, our family meals to go feed 3 to 4, so try all 9. Order carry out or delivery at Black Bear Diner.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
I'm Lee Hole.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Room.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Yeah.
probably use that when you interview some of these people, Lou. Just send that like as a little, you know, sound file with your inquiries. This is a music-rich environment, unfortunately, on a very dire topic. But okay, so go back to the web of nonprofit hell.
What were 30 or 40 years ago, individual hospitals and smaller nonprofits have morphed into these hospital chains, but they also own all kinds of clinics and ambulance centers and what have you. Like I say, these are big fish. Can you imagine, you know, employing 70,000 people in Boston? Like how big a fish you are in Boston. But there's another aspect to it. Is these hospitals are major purchases of medical supplies, and they're also major purchases of pharmaceuticals. And there's a lot of research and development going on with, you know, cutting-edge scalpels, no pun intended, and other pharmaceuticals and things like that. These guys have got a front-row seat on that. So you've got some of these hospital executives who are making $10 million a year. They're also overseeing a medical equipment purchasing budget of multiple billions of dollars a year. So there's all kinds of opportunity for these people to sort of meld into this whole community that manufactures pharmaceuticals and manufactures medical equipment. When it gets to the issue of the patient seating process, you can see how easy it would be for these big outfits, like, you know, New York City Health and Hospitals and Montefiore. There's a lot of these groups. They have like 11 hospitals. They have, you know, 40 facilities around New York City. It'd be very easy for them to just grab up whatever protective equipment there was available. And these nursing homes, a lot of which are independent, a lot of which are just strapped for cash, et cetera, they are no way during the initial month or 5 weeks of the crisis could they prevent the very hospitals that are sending them the patients from depriving them of any sort of protective equipment.
Right. Yeah, they've got a lock on all that.
How convenient.
And these are the guilty parties. I think they're this has to be mentioned. I'm trying to figure out how much does it cost to have a COVID-19 patient spend, you know, a day in the hospital or do a hospital stay. Like for every, it's a fraction of the overall people who test positive end up going to hospital. But what is the cost of that hospitalization? You know, three or four different estimates from, you know, different groups. It varies from around 20,000 to about 90,000 per a COVID stay. And the stays last from like 6 to 20 days. A lot of people stay in, from that moment they check in to the moment they leave, it's a 20-day stay. That is not uncommon. And hospitals are typically billing anywhere from 20,000 to 9. I saw 88,000 was one of them. That's if you get a ventilator, et cetera. the numbers on hospitalization are the same sort of nonsense that you see with the numbers of deaths and everything else. Florida has a larger population than New York State. I think Florida's around 22 million. New York State's a little under 20 million, like 19.5 million. So Florida, larger population than New York State. Florida, throughout the whole crisis, has had fewer than 10,000 hospitalizations. It's about 9,800. New York State, it is now at 89,000. And they're going to hit 100,000 definitely, you know, within the week. And look how much those hospitals are charging for a one hospitalization. And they are dinging these hospital insurance companies, a lot of which are backed up by the government. And Trump and Cuomo and all these guys keep coming out saying, you know, they, sort of, we got your back. So they're just running these incredible bills. I mean, in New York State, it's approaching 90,000 hospitalizations. The cost per hospitalization varies from 20,000 to 88,000 or 90,000 around there again. So average that out to around 40,000, multiply that by about 90,000. That's how much those very same those hospitals like Mount Sinai Health Systems and Partner Health Systems and Montefiore Health Systems, they're the ones who now have all these patients. So it worked just like that guy from the California long-term society said would happen. He used the figure 20. That's the actual figure that comes back in this. He was in the ballpark figure. Like, for every COVID infection patient you stick into a nursing home, you're going to get 20 patients back at the hospital in the ICU unit. And that's what happened in New York. It's almost, of course, the number is going to keep rising over time. So at this point, it is almost exactly 20. Because they dispersed 4,500 patients, and now they've got, their cumulative hospitalization is approaching 90,000. And there's like no other state of the union's got anything near that kind of hospitalization.
No.
I couldn't get California's cumulative number, but it would probably, you know, under 20,000.
And yet we hear hospitals are running at third staffing, and doctors are getting laid off because there are no patients. How's that?
They kicked everybody out. Oh, that's because you're living in California. Like, in the initial panic, they're booting everybody out of the hospitals. People had other things to do. People who had customers, they all got booted out of the hospitals because they wanted these massive intensive care units, which never filled up in most parts of the union. They haven't even filled up in places like New Jersey, which there's an underlying point. There never was a need to disperse all of those patients to the nursing homes. There never was this grand shortage of hospital space anywhere.
No, there wasn't. I mean, even these, I was reading the other day about all these field hospitals and all these emergency facilities they built.
Underutilized.
Or not utilized at all, and they've taken them all down.
Yeah, whole floors of hospitals sitting there. I know. There was never an initial urgency, but this is exactly what they wanted in New York. You know, they were hoping, you know, we'll get tens of thousands, which they got. So they did. The hospitals themselves, these were played off in like 700-bed hospitals, and they morphed into like, you know, 2,000-bed hospitals. So some of these hospitals are making huge amounts of money.
Mm. God, you'd hate to think that was the motive, but it wouldn't be the first time that's ever
happened. They would have been totally on top of this. One thing that I find with absolute disturbing regularity, as I go through, whenever I go, like, I go to this various website, and then I'll look up the About Us section, and I'll look up the People section, and I'll start going through the bios of all these people throughout this whole pandemic. And what you find again and again with absolute disturbing regularity is this is not their first rodeo. You find people, you know, this is, you know, that he was involved in the SARS epidemic and then the MERS epidemic and then the bird flu and all those. You know, he'd been involved in all these various government programs, you know, up and down the line. That bio reoccurs hundreds of times. So when there was first a rumor that we were going to have a pandemic, these guys' ears all perk up. Yeah, I mean, this is now, you know, pandemic number 7 for Howard Zucker. They've been through this before. They know the importance of public relations. You know, they know the importance of death statistics and things like that. And they know that there's going to be oodles upon oodles of money to be made, middlemanning various medical supplies and things like that. You got, you know, Jared Kirsch and all these other clowns getting involved in that.
And you'd like to think that they've been involved in a bunch of other, you know, giant issues, so they should be really good at it by now, but unfortunately that line seems to be going the wrong way.
No, this is, they're clearly not.
Yeah, obviously.
Particularly the people that we get lectured to the most, like all those guys, they oversaw one of the greatest either medical fiascos or sort of one of the worst mass murders in modern history, which is what it really is. It's sort of they could plead sort of manslaughter on the last maybe 20,000 murders. Like, Your Honor, we only wanted to kill 1,000 of them or so, and then it just blew all out of proportion, and we couldn't put a stop to it. So maybe they can plead for a lesser sentence on the last 19 or 20,000 homicides, but first 1,000, no, you got to take those on the head.
Wow.
Man, you just about can't make that kind of stuff up, and with a lot of good research. So the articles, we're going to head out to our news break here in a couple of seconds, but you can look this all up. It's at wethepeopleradio.us, and William has done some amazing research. We'll be right back.
That I see walking in these woods. Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jeremy House. America's cities are boarding up windows, sweeping up glass, and covering graffiti after the country's most significant night of protests in a half century. The turbulence sparked by the death of George Floyd shook not only the streets of New York and Los Angeles, but dozens of smaller communities. Target is temporarily closing 105 stores in 10 states after several were broken into during the recent protests over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis last week. The company is closing 46 stores in California and 33 in Minnesota, where the protests over Floyd's death began. GOP Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina says China is growing more unpopular over its handling of the coronavirus pandemic.
They're refusing to cooperate with the world community about how the virus started, where it started, and what the nature of the virus. The wet markets continue to flourish, which is the where the pandemic's come from.
Graham tells the Salem Radio Network China's communist leadership is growing pressure from inside its own borders as well as the international community. A national security law proposed by China could imperil Hong Kong's status as one of the world's best places to do business.
The law led Secretary of State Pompeo to say that Washington will no longer treat Hong Kong, already reeling from anti-government protests and the pandemic, as autonomous from Beijing. The Chinese government has not given details of the law aimed at suppressing secessionist and subversive activity, but business groups, lawyers, and financial analysts say potential repercussions range from loss of business for Hong Kong's financial markets and law firms to a loss of professional talent in the city. Rich Thomason reporting.
SpaceX has delivered two NASA astronauts to the International Space Station. The capsule docked automatically barely 19 hours after liftoff. More on these stories at townhall.com.
These are tough times for everyone, so dealing with your timeshare may not be your biggest concern. But when this passes, do you still want a lifetime of payments, fees, and commitments for a timeshare you were misled into buying?
Hi, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started the timeshare cancellation industry by exposing the ugly truth about timeshares and giving folks the straight facts. I've been fighting the timeshare giants ever since, so no one knows this industry better than me and my team. Today, we have over 200 employees and have saved our clients an average of $65,000 in lifetime payments. Imagine putting those timeshare dollars back in your pocket. Give my office a call today. I guarantee if we take you as a client, we will cancel your timeshare contract or you'll pay nothing.
Call Wesley Financial now for your free information kit. 800-290-7100. That's 800-290-7100. 800-290-7100.
A Pro Football Hall of Famer is in the fight of his life.
Floyd Little, who starred in the NFL for the Denver Broncos, has been diagnosed with cancer. The 77-year-old Little, a three-time All-American at Syracuse from 1964 to 66, was selected sixth overall in the 1967 combined AFL-NFL draft by the Broncos and spent his entire nine-year career with the franchise, rushing for 6,323 yards and 43 touchdowns. Little was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2010. A GoFundMe page has been set up to help pay for treatment costs. Rhonda Rockster reporting.
Police say they used tear gas to disperse demonstrators in Brazil's largest city today as groups protesting and supporting President Jair Bolsonaro neared a clash. The demonstration by several hundred black-clad members of football fan groups in Sao Paulo appeared to be the largest anti-Bolsonaro street march in months. News and analysis at townhall.com. Military analyst retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis says watching the death of George Floyd was infuriating, but probably didn't incite the violence seen in protests across the country.
I think anyone that saw that incident in Minneapolis the other day was horrified. We were sobered by the treachery, what happened to that man. No one endorses that, no one in their right mind.
McGinnis says the righteous anger people feel over the death of Floyd is not reflected in the looting and violence unleashed in several cities since his death. Israel's defense minister apologized for the Israeli police's deadly shooting of an unarmed Palestinian man who was autistic The shooting of Eyad Halak in Jerusalem's Old City on Saturday drew broad condemnations and revived complaints alleging excessive force by Israeli security forces. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. All our microphones are on, all our headsets work. The second hour is always a lot less
we're all tuned up,
dramatic.
Ready to go.
How's that?
Yeah.
So we have our guest on for the second hour is the same guy who was on the first hour. And if you missed it, you should go back and listen to it in the archives. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape right now is geared up for the hot weather electrical shutdown that we're going to experience here in California.
More things
so
to
if you need a
to.
Generator, go by and see them. They also handle the Honda product line, and they've got lots of Honda generators on the floor and ready to go. You can go by and see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or give them a call at 226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And we live in a riot-free zone, so feel free to go there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's parking and everything.
There's parking.
It's kind of great.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So our guest today is William Walter Kay. I added his middle name because it makes him sound more official. He lives in Alberta, Canada. And he writes a lot for the Canada Free Press and also for the Global Research website. It's a center for research on globalism. I've put those links on there for you. And he runs a website called ecofascism.com. No trick spelling there, just ecofascism.com. And really good information, very, very well researched. So, you know, William, unlike so many people out there who just, you know, kind of want to shoot their mouth off with all their, you know, beliefs and all that. He actually does the research and attempts to inform people. It's a whole new idea. It's kind of what our media used to do, but sort of, you know.
Yeah, that was before your time, William.
That was a rumor that, you know, that was what they were there for, but.
That's a myth that the modern media created. They were once good and now
they were
bad,
once amazing and
they were always bad. Yeah.
Now they're in the tank, but you know, before they weren't.
That's not how we just notice how bad they are. We're wiser, that's all.
Hey, before we get off on something else, I just was thinking during the break, I was curious, in your research. Okay, so the statistics and all the things that we've seen for this COVID-19 thing are that it affects the elderly disproportionately. But
correct.
In light of the fact that the highest death rate was in a place where they put the elderly in a position to where they would die more often. I mean, do you think it really, based on your research, is it because of the patient seating or is it really because?
Oh yeah. There are several jurisdictions around the world where it's pretty obvious they did patient seating. What they did in Montreal was more confinement. There's a bit of mention of actual sending patients in, but they just suddenly imposed a rule that no nursing home could send a COVID-19 patient to a hospital. And over time, you'll get the same effect because they're just not equipped to manage that sort of, you know, the proper infection control, and it gets around the whole hospital. It wasn't as bad in Montreal as it was in New York. But there's other places out around the world. It's the key to understanding the pandemic is how geographically different it is. There's the area in northern Italy, starting with Lombardy and a few little provinces around it, just astronomical death count, and they were the first place to get hit. And there's a correlation. The higher the absolute number of deaths, the greater percentage those deaths are in nursing homes. That's another reason why we know that New York is lying about their nursing home death count. I mean, they're coming in at 25% of all deaths. You know, New York, Rhode Island, 55 to 75%. Montreal, over 90%. You get into Lombard and these places, it's always over 50% of these massive death counts. And they're not even counting all the workers that are there, that were infected as well, nor is anyone commenting on all of the people who were infected by people who were first infected in these nursing homes. Because those workers, they had lives, they were going out, you know, socializing, they had families and what have you. I think ultimately they're going to show that, like, where there was no seeding, you get a California, you know, 100 per million. Where there's seeding, you get, you know, 1,000 to, you know, 1,800 per million. Like in places like Brooklyn, over 2,000. Madrid in Spain, like there's a province in Spain called the Community of Madrid, and it's basically the city of Madrid. Same thing. They were the first region to follow Lombardy's lead. Lombardy started this practice, and they were initially exaggerating the death count, but you see the same phenomenon take over. These people started this city. I suspect it might have been done in earlier pandemics, but there was five or six specific jurisdictions where it happened, and where it happened, monster death tolls. It's Belgium, it's Madrid, it's Northern Italy, it's New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and it's Montreal. And then later on, much later, England starts posting these high death tallies and other places. But there's definitely a timeline there. There was a sort of a domino effect. Undoubtedly, the first region to do it is Lombardy. And you had just this wave of deaths. And a lot of the other places, they were tended to be exaggerating their deaths, and they were just sort of repackaging last year's sort of flu season death tallies. And then there are certain regions where, no, they are not faking it. Their aggregate deaths year over year are going through the moon, and it's almost all coming out of nursing homes, geriatric wings, detox facilities, other, you know, assisted adult living facilities. That is like the overwhelming portion, like
but
the
80-90%
of it.
There's also the number of deaths that are attributed to COVID that aren't really COVID. I mean, they just reported a guy in California got attacked by a shark and died of COVID. I mean,
yeah, exactly. That was in the early stages. I noticed that my first article I wrote, which is not on those lists, was about that. When this pandemic first started happening, I thought, no, this isn't that severe at all. They're dealing with people with extensive comorbidities. A lot of the patients were 90 years old and they had lung cancer, and the media and the governments were not properly articulating that to people. And I my initial article was accusing them of jacking up their death count. And then as time wore on, I realized in a lot of jurisdictions, they really weren't. Like the large parts of Western Canada, it's not 100 per million. It's like 6 per million. And there's states in the U.S. like that, like Montana, North Dakota. It just simply never happened at all.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at, as time wore on, you see these here massive death tallies start to emerge in places where it is not mere. Like in some places, you could say, look, if you compare it to last year's flu season, this isn't significantly different. There's been flu seasons in the U.S. where 70,000 people die. So there was a period in the early stages of the pandemic, I thought, they're just repackaging another year's flu statistics. Sure, there's going to be a lot of elderly people die. But then I started to notice that there were specific jurisdictions where the body count was just going through the moon. But it's very geographically specific. Now keep in mind that Boston, Newark area, well over half the deaths in the United States. If you take them out of the statistical equation, it's not nearly as bad.
Yeah. And
so that to me, the key understanding is just realizing just how geographically concentrated this is. And then the opposite is there's wide areas of the U.S., like Nebraska and Wyoming through there, almost no impact whatsoever. A few deaths, most of those elderly people. It was basically just a nasty flu bug was all that ever really happened. But in areas where there was pretty obviously a systematic seeding and confining of infectious COVID patients amongst the most vulnerable population, no, then you got something different on your hands.
And then
got this just massive body count.
Right. And you brought up confining. I think the whole stay-at-home thing didn't really help this situation at all either, did it?
Well, if you live alone, if you didn't, you're infecting everybody you're living with. Like, that was sort of the other Cuomo brothers, his quarantine, when he wasn't even at home.
Right.
For
right.
Parts of it.
Yeah. That he was in the basement.
That was complete nonsense. Trump had the right idea. Same idea that President Xi of China has, just massive field hospitals. Anybody who tests positive, no, you don't go home, hang out with your family, hang out with your friends. No, that's not a quarantine.
No.
No, you go into this facility where all you're going to see is people in hazmat suits for 2 weeks, and then you're going to leave, they're going to give you just the right diet and medication, and you're going to be fine. But what Trump sent 4,000 bed spaces in the Javits Center and the U.S. Navy ship Comfort early April. Those 4,000 patients that those hospitals sent to the nursing homes, every one of them could have been intercepted by those field hospitals.
Yeah.
Not a single person would have went back to a nursing home. They would have went into a proper military-grade quarantine, and you would be monitored until you were well, and then you would leave. You know, and if that's the response you should have. If there's going to be a massive wave like this, yeah, you're right. I mean, this idea of go home and quarantine, well, that's nonsense. Like, that isn't a quarantine at all.
Right, right.
Well, in a lot of places they did, but let's face it, in lots of places they didn't. When we come back, I want to know from you when it started to become public that the nursing home thing was caused by people being sent back and what was done kind of on the heels of that. I'm kind of curious what your research showed for that, because I haven't really looked at that. So we are here discussing all this horribleness with our guest, William Alter Kay. He is from Alberta, Canada. We love our Canadian friends, although we haven't had him on for like 2 years, so our bad.
Yeah.
We'll have to stop doing that. And so you're listening to We the People. You can find all these previous shows that are actually awesome and archives that go back about 10 years at wethepeopleradio.us.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Pulse Urgent Care is happy to announce the reopening of our urgent care clinic. Our hours are Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and closed on Sundays. To protect the patients and the staff, we will continue to follow the recommendations on social distancing and face coverings. If you have or had a fever, cough, or shortness of breath within the last 14 days, please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for screening. Check out our website and Facebook page for more information. PulseUrgentCareCenter.com, 100 East Cypress Avenue. If it's urgent for you, it's important to
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Who is it?
Sometimes I really think I'm going crazy in the night. When I hide down in the covers and I won't turn out the light. I think nothing's gonna get to me, but then again it might. What can I do to keep from going crazy in the night?
Apparently nothing, but anyway.
No,
it's kind of a rhetorical question.
It's too late for you anyway.
So William... Did they at some point admit that they you know, did they try to throw up the old, uh-oh, we made a mistake, and reverse course, or did they
just
sort of let it roll?
Well, they reversed the order. The March 25th order was reversed on May the 10th, which is sort of an admission, but they never actually came out and said, oh, that was a big mistake. They just announced in New York, they just announced this whole new program of stringent tests and regulations. There was no me bad in that. Because they're using bogus statistics on deaths in nursing homes, Cuomo's telling people that New York State is 32nd on the list in terms of percentage of COVID deaths being in nursing homes. Well, they're just not counting them. There's a huge number. Anybody, if they can get them on an ambulance out the door before they CAC, that's not counted as a nursing home. And that's been what they've been doing since April the 16th.
Wow.
So you got to presume that their percentage of COVID deaths that are nursing home deaths is going to be the same as it is in the neighboring states and in other places where there's been these huge absolute number of deaths. And that puts them in the 70% category. And that's the circus that no one wants to say, that the death count's probably already over 20,000 in New York State. They're claiming 6,000 have died in nursing homes in New York State. Fox ran an article 5 days ago. It was probably the best article so far. And they were saying 10,000 or more. But that is still an underestimation. The law, I can tell if it's a controlled opposition article or an article that's been planted to protect or to cover up the dirty deed. If they will totally lowball the number. They say, you know, they're acting like they're uncovering this crime, and then they'll mention that there could be as many as 5,000 nursing home deaths in New York State. No, it's probably already over 20,000. New Jersey's over 6,000. Massachusetts approaching 5,000. Those are the official numbers, and they also are suppressing it. So this is a scandal of just humongous proportions.
You mentioned changing courses, and you know, not to get off the subject, but have you done any research on Dr. Fauci? And
oh, that's right. We
and I mean, he, this guy, I mean, he was the authority on this thing from the very beginning, and it just seems like he's changed his mind so many times. Can we really trust his research?
Well, he's sort of a classic bureaucrat. That little agency, it's not a little agency, it's a multi-billion dollar agency that deals with infectious diseases that he runs. He started working there, like, what, 60 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And he just slowly wormed his way to the top. But I view that whole network, like there's, I forget the name of the agency, it's not CDC, it's the U.S. Infectious Disease Research Facility or something.
Yeah.
But it's a multi-billion dollar grant-making institution, and it's got its own laboratories and things like that. But it's part of a sort of a global network, like with who a lot of countries have these sorts of things, and they're all integrated. And when I was mentioning earlier, I keep coming across these people that this ain't their first rodeo, like this is the umpteenth time they've had their nose into a pandemic.
Right.
He's a classic one of those.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was instrumental in the whole AIDS thing. I mean, he was buried in that, and I don't think a lot of people realize.
And they know how to farm it. These guys, you know, they view these big, and now they think, well, maybe COVID will never go away. Okay, well, maybe we need some giant international institution with billions of dollars of endowment to just sort of manage this disease that never goes away.
Exactly.
And we could have another 10,000 guys in white lab jackets running around with stethoscopes on their shoulders, consuming resources in some bonfire out back.
That's a great picture.
But you, I thought what you were going to say is, like, when did people start to realize what was going on?
Oh, okay. You know, good question.
I was going to ask it.
Oh, sorry.
March 25th, Howard Zucker, Cuomo, issue that letter. Obviously, they'd been doing this for about a week already. Zucker had been sending these patients over. Then they issue this letter saying, you guys are going to take these patients whether you like them or not. You're not going to test them whether you want to or not. They're coming. They're staying at your place. They start pouring large numbers of these patients in there. Within 24 hours of them issuing that letter, There were long-term healthcare associations and nursing home associations were issuing news releases. They were protesting it. They were denouncing it. There was organizations of nursing homes that were trying to organize petitions and protests so they could block these patients from coming. It was instantly understood in the nursing home community that this was a fiasco in
the
making.
Bad idea.
And some of those early news reports that these long-term care associations put out said this is going to increase deaths and this is going to massively increase infections. And these letters were coming out within a day or two of that March 25th decree. So there was no mystery in the nursing home. There's a good video online of this one guy runs a nursing home. I think it was in Boston or or New York. They just dumped 58 patients on him. He's running a modern sort of well-to-do nursing home. He rips out walls in the facility. He builds this whole airtight chamber on the ground floor of the building. Like they had the renovation crews come in working around the clock to rip all these things out. They interviewed him about a month or so into it. He said he'd already lost 50 long-term patients in his facility to COVID. Even doing this, like even going to the trouble of like ripping out whole walls and building these, you know, airtight chambers and what have you. And there was a lot of other facilities. They're in dormitories. They've got narrow corridors. They've got crappy, you know, 80-year-old ventilation. They eat in communal dining halls. They have shared bath facilities and stuff like that. You are absolutely not going to stop it from raging right across the facility.
Right.
And everyone knows that. And that the nursing homes were complaining instantly when it was happening. They were protesting it. So that's another reason why I don't think they're going to be able to keep it down. And there's a host of articles from local newspapers in the whole New York, Long Island area where they're just interviewing people who work at nursing homes, and they're making an estimate of how many dead people came out of that home, and they're comparing it to government stats. The New York Post did one. They did four nursing homes, and the difference was often a factor of 10. The New York State was saying, you know, 7 people came out of that home dead. The people who worked there said, no, over 70. That happened in Montreal as well. The provincial government was saying that this one facility had only had 30 or 40 deaths in it. The ambulance attendants held a little news conference, and they talked about just how many bodies they had been pulling out of this facility. And it was way above what the state was saying. There's probably 20 stories online now from sort of mainstream, more local media outlets in that area dealing exclusively with that issue, with a nursing home where the manager, staff, the operator is saying, no, there's been over 115 fatalities, and the state is saying, no, 20, 30. That story just gets repeated over and over again.
That's amazing. You know, and I do recall shortly after, I don't remember the date, but Tomo on one of his morning shows said that when this whole nursing home thing was kind of exposed, he said, oh, well, we were only following federal guidelines. Yeah. That's why we did it.
That is absolute BS.
Yeah.
The CDC had issued very specific instructions against not doing this and warnings about doing this. They cherry-picked some sentence fragment from an earlier CDC communique saying that, you know, you could, in an emergency, transfer patients to all kinds of facilities. You could transfer them to billiard halls if you wanted to. But they did say you could transfer them to nursing homes and that. But there's a presumption that they would be equipped to do it, that they would know that you're going to do it. It would just start showing up. And they would clear out whole wards, and they would do what they could to isolate that unit. But they weren't saying, here's a great idea. You know, let's just take the infected patients and just sprinkle them around all the nursing homes in the jurisdiction. I mean, you got to wonder, at what conversation did that come up?
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
you're
sitting around the table
going, how are we going to manage the pandemic in New York? And someone goes, I got an idea. As the infected patients come into the emergency care ward, we just take them and drop them off at old folks' homes.
Yeah,
That's how we're going to manage the pandemic.
I hope all these people who lost relatives get some just raging class action suit going and expose this whole thing.
although there's multiple suits launched, I honestly believe one of the reasons why they're keeping this no assembly thing going on is because they don't want the victims of that to start getting holding like conferences and rallying, because they're also very geographically concentrated. Mm-hmm. There's that one photograph of that woman. She's taken a sheet and she's written "Como killed my mom" on it.
Ooh,
she's hanging that over a freeway overpass. There are people. There's a lot of it. Like, there's already hundreds of suits. When they lift the ban on public assembly, you better watch those people come together.
Yeah.
Big
yeah.
time.
Yeah, because you have that right on your article. The article, Howard Zucker's Scarlet Letter, it has a picture of that giant sheet that says, Cuomo killed my...
So those people are out there, and they number in the thousands.
Yeah, and it's coming out. We're hearing more and more stories.
Well, there are too many people affected, and all those people had families, and they couldn't go visit them. They didn't know what happened.
All of a sudden, they just got a notice.
And the moving
of
the COVID patients wasn't a secret. A lot of, when they do interviews with relatives, they say that, my aunt or my mother, whoever it was, called me and said, they're saying that they're moving COVID patients into the building. Like, it was no secret to the people, the residents and staff, that they were starting to send them in. But then, once again, like, within days, there's this one article about a woman who lost her mother, and that's what she said. Her mother called and said that, they're starting to bring COVID-19 patients into the building. Within 2 days, she couldn't get anyone to answer the phone there. There was no one at the front desk. The building just disintegrated. And dozens and dozens of people, including her mother, died. That story gets repeated over and over again.
And there was
it's just remarkable. Like, it's within a week, the organization just disintegrates.
Yeah, there was the weather lady at Fox, Janice Dean, maybe? She had a very similar story about her mom. And you can only imagine. I mean, you look at the numbers, got to be a whole lot more people with the same. I have to take another really quick break, believe it or not. Our guest is William Kay. He is from Alberta, Canada, and does a ton of research. So these are always good shows for you to share with your friends and family. It's all the stuff that the media doesn't research anymore, if they ever did. And you can get people and help them get informed. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Reading Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to readingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. Grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee. Snacks and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to readingcivic.com to learn more.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
All right, William. We have like less than a half hour. Tick, tick, tick. What are we missing in this? What have we not discussed? Not that I think you, on this topic, you ever run out of information because it just keeps going. What do you think we'll see next, though? Like, you have any indication of other things bubbling below the surface?
I actually believe that these race riots or whatever these events that are happening are a way of the media, and once again, with their Democratic Party machine allies, are trying to change the topic. Like, up until those riots,
doing a pretty good job,
it was all COVID-19. And I think that the more this sort of scandal grows, the more anxious they are to change the channel. And remember that this is New York, New Jersey, Boston. This is a lot of the American mass media companies are headquartered there. They are very disproportionately influential in the country. That whole area there, the Democratic parties of those areas, all 10 senators from those states are Democrats. They absolutely dominate the electoral process at the state level and at the mayoralty level as well. Like almost all of the cities. Boston has had a Democratic mayor for 90 years now. It has all the features of a one-party state, a lot of that area. That the same government has been in power for so long. The New York State Assembly has had a Democratic majority since 1972. They've had the same chair of the New York State Assembly Health Committee, and that approves the entire health budget for New York State. They've had the same chair of that committee for 36 years.
Holy cow.
His name is Gottfried, and he's a euthanasia fanatic.
Yikes.
And he's one of the people that's really been pushing to have a far more liberal euthanasia regime in New York State. They were just on the cusp of doing it. New Jersey just passed their euthanization bill, and the other four states each had one. Not that they were anticipating this. But it's kind of funny, because in Canada there was this sort of news series. It was called, What Were You Doing Before the World Became Completely Unnormal? What were you doing before this whole pandemic happened? And people were sending in photographs saying, you know, I was, you know, doing this, I was, you know, working here. This is what I was doing before the world just went sideways with this whole pandemic. What was going on in those five states is there was just a full court press going on to liberalize euthanasia. They had, after many years of struggle, had just introduced a bill to the New York Assembly, signed by 30 co-sponsors. This sort of die with dignity bill. The other four states also had bills before the House. Just when things went wonky. Now, I am not suggesting that this was some sort of conspiracy on behalf of euthanasia freaks to do it. But
it could be.
It's very clear the more you get to know that community, the real monomaniacs, the people who have spent their lives trying to get more liberal medically assisted killing legislation, the more you look at that people, the more you look at the others, these people have a very low opinion of certain segments of society. And they very much want to direct the euthanasia at certain target populations. And if you look at the sort of the demographics of who they really want to bump off, they want to certainly the big push on now in Quebec. Not only have they, you know, dramatically legalized it, like far more than anywhere else in the country. There's a big push on now where they're going to old folks' homes and they're trying to get them to sign pre-consents, just in case the old person loses their marbles. And they will determine if there's any marbles. Like right now, 4% of all deaths in Quebec are induced. 4% of all deaths in the province.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And it's even higher because there's another thing called where they start giving older sick people just morphine and heroin. It doesn't kill them dead, but it rapidly speeds up the process. And that's not even counting them. Oh, you go to places like Holland, it's way beyond that now. I mean, in Quebec now, where it's already 4%, like, induced, like, we show up today at 2 o'clock, and that person's being put down. That's 4% of all deaths in Quebec. They want to dramatically increase that, and the key is to have old people sign these consents. Because the trouble now is they've got people who've got dementia, or so they say, no longer can legally consent. So by getting large numbers to pre-consent, they're hoping to get that 4% up to, you know, where it is in, like, Holland, where it's well over 10% of all deaths now are induced.
Now,
are they
giving consent to family, or are they giving consent to the state to?
They're giving the consent to the state that should I lose my senses,
holy cow.
Without any further ado, I can be put down.
Yeah.
And they are going to determine if you've got your, you know, the skill testing questions. Like, here's your Rubik's Cube, Bill. You've got 5 minutes. hope you make it, man.
Yeah, that is frightening. Yeah, they can.
Yeah, well, there's a big push on, because they don't want to pay for these people, okay?
Right.
It costs X number of dollars. So I'm sure somewhere deep in the bowels of the New York Reserve Building, there's somebody counting beans for every COVID-19 patient that gets killed. How much money did the state just save? Because that's another elderly person that isn't going to live for the next 7 or 8 years and run up an even larger tab.
Well, and that was during Obamacare, during that whole thing when they were trying to, they're still always trying to change the health system, but there was that big old discussion with Rahm Emanuel's brother, you know, about, well, you know, if you're 70, you've pretty much lived your life, so you're just basically
had a good life.
Yeah, you're hogging up space for other people, and it's like, wait a second.
We're from the federal government. Could you get in the car, sir? Yeah, we're giving you a 70th birthday party down.
Yeah, we'll drive.
We have a black van coming through later this afternoon.
Yeah, so there was that one movie, Logan's Run, where you get to a certain age, you get bumped off. That's what these people are definitely thinking about. They're doing bean counters, and there's also a lot of classism and racism and all kinds of other stuff gets into this, but there's certainly segments of the population that, they are more than willing to bump off. And I'm not someone who's even really opposed to euthanasia. I think most people would say there are circumstances where it's okay. But when you see a place like Montreal, where the medical establishment is just wall-to-wall members of various pro-euthanasia organizations, and they start just cranking out thousands of corpses per month, then everyone should get leery.
That's
precisely the demographic cohort, you know, the really elderly people, the bedridden. They definitely want to bump those people off.
And that's where it always goes. It always ends up going there. Once you go down that road, pretty soon you end up with the 4%.
Well,
or
and
the
not
5%.
To put too fine a point in it, but let's also remember the other end of the spectrum, right? They've already absolutely captured the let's kill babies end. So the beginning, right?
They've
got them in some states all the way up to the moment of birth. So, you know, they're kind of running out of rope there. And so now they've got to start working on the other end of the spectrum. God, I guess.
There's always been a very strong connection between like these extreme sort of euthanasia programs and the fascist movement. They've historically sort of viewed large segments of the population, sort of a life not worth living, and
according
I read the history
them.
Of it in Germany. You know, it went from like over the course of I would say less than 8 years, the first euthanasia to a point where they were probably euthanizing 50,000 people a year. It was started at a few places, and it was, you know, clearly the bedridden dementia cases. And then they just kept broadening the horizon of it, you know, year after year, and expanding the facilities. And once you've got a facility that's, you know, cremating, you know, 15, 20 people a day, and they already have these in Holland right now. I mean, there's a clinic in downtown Holland that cremates 750 people a year. And you come in one-stop shopping, you do the procedure there, you are put to death. They have put to death, and I'm not making this up, young women who are suffering from depression have consented to medically assisted suicide and have been put to death in Holland.
Oh,
it's extremely liberal there. Basically, anybody can walk in and say, I want to be put to death, and they will put you to death. And they're liberalizing it in Canada quite a bit. No longer in Canada is there a reasonable likelihood that you're going to die soon. That has been taken out of the law. So when they're determining whether or not to bump somebody off, he's saying, oh, he's going to die in 6 months anyway. They don't care. They're just, they're really trying to ramp it up. It has a lot to do with pension plans and a lot to do with sort of managing state finances in an era when people are growing older and older. I think there's some really high-level bean counters that
really are quite in favor of it. And euthanasia is an organized political movement. Just type in the word death with dignity, and you'll see there are chapters in every city and town.
Wow.
There's chapters in every state in the USA. And they're highly organized, and it's quite often people who run palliative care centers and people who run hospices and things like that.
Well, you look
it should be legal, but everyone should be leery of these groups.
Well, especially signing up ahead of time.
We're in the business of snuffing people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You sign up ahead of time and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, at that point,
they come get you.
Yeah, you kind of might not want to put yourself on their radar.
Oh, yeah, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Really quick break, and we'll be back with our guest, William Kay. We can ponder during the break the Chinese and how they handled their COVID patients. They just brought in 40 incinerators, and their death count went way down. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to an North State with no more homeless pets.
This ad is not from HUD or FHA and was not approved by HUD or any government agency. Consumers remain responsible for property taxes, homeowners insurance, and home maintenance. Premium is an equal housing lender. This is not a commitment to lend. Rich Pinnell Branch Manager, NMLS number 1067640, PRMI NMLS 3094.
Let's talk about reverse mortgages for a moment. If you're 62 or older and have equity in your home, a reverse mortgage could be a tool for your retirement. For those cash-strapped retirees or those looking for an additional source of income, this is the answer. A reverse mortgage could eliminate your mortgage payment. Another benefit, extend the life of your existing retirement cash. A reverse mortgage isn't for everyone, but when you call Rich Pinnell of Primary Residential Mortgage, Rich can counsel you to see if this is a fit for you. If it fits, then life just got easier for you. You see, Rich Pinnell and Primary Residential Mortgage specialize in reverse mortgages. Rich's experience in this specialized field is why so many people have benefited from a reverse mortgage. Call Primary Residential Mortgage. They're happy to help. 530-722-4579 or go to richforreverses.com. That's rich, the number 4, reverses.com.
I expected it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Yeah, we are in the Twilight Zone. Ashley sent me a message here right before the break that there was a Star Trek episode about people that were in a certain culture when they turned 65 and they were expected to just die.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one? I was not a Star Trek.
No, I didn't see that episode, which is kind of surprising because I thought I'd seen them all. But there is a movie called Logan's Run where at the age of 30 you get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it all depends on who thinks, you know, I mean, when you're 10, you think 30's old. When you're 58, for instance, I'm thinking 70's looking young.
The fancy word is senicide, like S-E-N-I-C-I-D-E.
Yeah.
It is the murder of the old. It happens in a lot of cultures, you know, like putting grandma on the ice floe. You got to be careful with that. There's there are a lot of lawsuits. Like, a lot of these old people, they take their money with them to the grave, right? So there's an estate. There's a will. And I was reading this one lawyer.
Oh,
there's a lot
geez,
of,
I don't even think
you know,
I'm not evil enough. I forgot about that
people that, they want Granny's property. They
yeah.
don't want Granny anymore. And so when you get into these mass euthanasia things, you got to watch it because those people start getting involved.
Yikes.
They want to bump her off so we can get
yeah.
access to this.
Yeah.
Stuff.
For all the Star Trek people who are going to be frustrated now that we referenced an episode and didn't give you the details, Ashley tells us it's called Unnatural Selection. So I'm sure you can go find
okay.
that. There we go. So just tie that up there.
That is. Well, no, there's, if you get into the topic of femicide, then there's usually, they'll go to a place like Wikipedia, they'll list a variety of fiction sources where
oh.
authors have talked about it. This sort of something, it has something that's gone on in other societies where you would sort of, you know, in hunting and gathering societies, what have you, sort of bump off the elderly, take them for long
sure.
walks and things like that.
Sure. Yeah, and see, in the past,
they
made a great
doing
story.
It here that much.
Yeah, it was a great story in the past because it never happened, but now all of a sudden it's becoming
kid,
part
like
of our
the first
society.
Time you see that is what, like Old Yeller or something?
Well, I'm sure that the gnomes on top of this are you know, sort of, they're wrestling with the issue of, you know, modern medicine can keep people living for so much longer. We're putting ourselves into a crisis.
Oh, that's what they say. They have said that a bunch of times. But yeah, modern medicine is what's
screwing
it all up.
Well, obviously, one of the solutions is to really pop up that death rate amongst the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
One of the takeaway things from this whole pandemic is the demographic population that died is pretty much the same demographic population that the euthanasia advocates would have already bumped off had they had the sort of laws that they wanted, had they had the laws that they have in Holland or Montreal. In New York, those people would have already been gone. Because they've got professional counselors now that go around and talk to people. They can talk you into signing on the dotted line. In fact, the Death with Dignity group in Quebec, part of their manifesto is that people have a right to have professional counseling on end-of-life issues.
God, that is
like
just,
a professional persuader.
That's just like
they've long done this with sterilization. Quite often, after a woman has had a birth, they've learned that the precise psychological technique you can get the woman to consent to a sterilization right after a birth, particularly if it's a difficult birth, you get them to consent right on the table, so she'll be sterilized forever.
Wow.
Using that technique, they sterilized a third of all the women in Puerto Rico. In the 1970s.
Well, you know, William, the other thing that kind of ties up with this is a guy that we've interviewed a bunch of times, and it's on technocracy. And I'm just drawing a blank on his name, but he wrote a book called Technocracy, Technocracy Rising, I think. And in that technocracy movement, that was also one of their things that you should. Robert's giving me smoke signals. Patrick Wood, yeah, Patrick Wood's his name. That ties up with what you're saying, because the technocrat, that's a society run by technocrats, which is what we've had for the last few months. No elected officials, just, you know, experts in their field. And their big thing was, end of life and also abortion. And they were sterilizing pretty much anybody that... You know, couldn't spell very well. Oh, you must be retarded. Bye bye. You can't reproduce.
Spell sterilization.
Well, they and,
use an S, buddy.
Well, yeah. And you
line
know,
B.
Well, the crazy.
Exactly. You line up over there, you'll be fine.
Well, the crazy part of that is, you know, most of the time people have you know researched this or whatever, but Patrick Wood is actually the adopted child of a woman who was sterilized during that time period when the technocrats, when that technocrat movement was going on, because her parents were sort of part of it, and they sterilized.
I think the figure right
the
now
daughter.
In the United States is 700,000 women a year are sterilized every year in the United States.
Isn't that nuts?
It's still very, and there's. I know a lot of women who've been talked into it by their doctors. There's once again, they've honed these persuasive conversation techniques. If you're going in for any kind of feminine surgery, you are going to get this calculated sales pitch to become sterilized. If you go in for any kind of abortion in the United States, you're going to get this very calculated sales pitch to become sterilized. They know what they're doing. They've honed this over 50, 60 years, these sales pitches.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you ever check into a facility, a senior facility, and the counselor comes at you with, right to
the paperwork for them to make decisions.
Yeah, don't check in.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah.
The thing is, too, with this, I think this has caused a lot of people to rethink the senior living idea. You know, well, mom doesn't want to come and live with us because she doesn't want to be a burden, so she's happy in this facility. And whether that's true or not, I'm not going to make a judgment. But I do think families are going to take a much, much harder look at what happens with the seniors in their family. It's like, I think we're going to need to keep them a little closer to home.
It's a hard call. I mean, a lot of people, it's a lot of work to take care of some of these people. And I don't know, it's a really hard call. There was a lot of hypocrisy amongst the Democrats out on the East Coast, though, when they a lot of them took their parents out of the old folks' home.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And sent them to private facilities and that. There were several four leading politicians that have done that, which typical from that crew.
Well, I think it was one of the health directors for one of the states back there pulled her mom out right before they started shipping.
It's almost like the, pull their money out of the stock market and then... Yeah. To me, it's very similar.
Yeah, that's just evil. I can remember the article now, yeah.
Well.
But that's what you expect. I mean, the Democratic Party are, in some regions of the country, are approaching almost one-party states, and that's one of the underlying stories. Everywhere where you saw these really grotesque, massive COVID fatalities, which almost in every instance has been nursing home fatalities, you will find a region where there's a single party that is absolutely entrenched. You've got to be pretty confident of your position. You've got to know that your ass is going to be covered before you would even contemplate something as crazy as patient seating at old folks' homes. So only people who were deeply entrenched in a political party where they knew that they're going to win the next election anyways would even think about this stuff. And the Democrats,
kind of
they win elections by landslides
it,
across there.
God, and when we... 60-80%
of the vote.
Well, we've been speaking with a lot of Chinese dissidents over the last year and a half, not realizing how interesting that would actually make this whole pandemic with all the information we've gathered. But I really do hope people go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us and click on the China tab and look down through those topics, because there are a bunch of them for the last, 18 months or so. And some of them were exactly what you're just talking about. All those same things totally laid out, and they have verified all of that 100 ways from Sunday, and the Chinese wrote the book on a lot of this stuff. So
yeah, it's a highly authoritarian society.
Yep.
I don't for better or worse,
doctrine.
I mean, it's gonna. I'm not really much of a China basher. My focus has been on the fiascos here.
Yeah.
There certainly, had the Chinese reported things in a prompter fashion, I think, yeah, it would have reduced it. But then I'm just looking at what's happening here on this. If you look from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it's day and night.
Yeah, one of our Chinese guests,
minor flu.
Like one of our Chinese guests, he literally looked at all the demographics and he looked at the political parties and the epidemic, and he did the math. He's a microbiologist, so I think they just are addicted to math. But he did the math on what you just were saying, who was managing those areas under these kinds of things and how they kind of helped themselves get away with
it. That determines what your body count is.
Yep, it really did.
It's the response. It's what the rulers did in that area. Made a huge
spooky
difference. 15 times as much fatalities. That's the difference between New York and California.
Yeah. Oh, William, thank you.
That is not some sort of foible. I mean, it's not like they're 15% higher. No,
yeah,
1,500% higher.
That is downright creepy.
That has to be explained.
We have to jump off, but we're going to talk to you guys, or to you again, because our folks love you, and we think you're super smart, so thanks a million. Have fun in Alberta, and we'll talk to you soon.
Will do.
Our guest, William Kay, you were listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.